Welcome to Marissa's Wicked Word Nosh, a place to chow down on topics relevant to writers of all kinds.
Hello, and welcome to Marissa's Wicked Word Nosh. I'm Marissa, and I hope you've had a great week. I know they always go by so quickly. I usually wonder why time has to fly that quickly, but at the same time, I really enjoy sitting down doing the preparation for new podcast episodes. I kind of can't wait for that. So maybe in a sense, it's good that time flies a little quickly. That's one way to think of it, I guess. Anyway, I'm going to get right into this week's interview. I spoke via Skype a few nights ago, once again, to Tim Boffman. I originally spoke to Tim back in February of this year. I believe that was episode 21. If you haven't listened to it yet, I highly recommend you go back and listen to it. Tim does a lot of different types of writing. He's tried a lot of different types of projects, and I've learned so much by speaking to him, and I know you will too. Also, it's been a great experience to sit down with a writer at two different points in time and kind of get a sense of how their approach to writing has evolved over time. And also to maybe go over topics that you didn't discuss the first time around. Like, for example, I thought of some things that I didn't think of in my first interview with Tim, so I was able to go over those areas with him as well. So it's always a really good experience talking to Tim, and I think you will get a lot out of this episode. So enjoy. So my guest today is the first time I'm having a repeat guest on, so that's pretty exciting. This is Tim Boffman, Jr. He's an author, blogger, and freelance editor. His upcoming sci-fi novel, Kotov Syndrome, focuses on the relationship between a young woman and her android girlfriend. He is also the writer behind the blog That Tiny Website, the short story compilation, an epilogue to Innocence, and the Twitter Choose Your Own Adventure story, Project Tasman. Tim, welcome back to the show. It's really great having you on again. I'm really excited from what I've been seeing on Twitter about this new book you have coming out, Kotov Syndrome. You've been doing like a lot of advanced publicity for it, and I've been really impressed. What inspired this book and series?
So the book itself was an idea I got, weirdly enough, out of a short story that I wrote, me and one of my friends, that I had done NaNoWriMo with a few years back. Occasionally we'll send each other writing prompts as kind of a challenge to one another. And I found one that I sent to her, and our rule is that if one of us sends a writing prompt, we both have to do it as long as one of us does, as a general rule. And I ended up doing this this prompt that basically became the main character of the story, Erica, and her girlfriend, Abby, albeit it wasn't a sci-fi story initially. It was just, you know, a couple thousand word short story I wrote. And I liked the idea. I liked both of the characters, and, you know, that kind of became its own story as a result. I don't think that I ended up really deciding I wanted to be a series right away. I started writing the story itself in April of 2017, give or take, and I didn't ultimately realize I wanted it to be a series probably until about a year in, when I was just finishing up the first draft. It's like, no, I want to do something with this. As I got to ending it, it's like, no, I want to turn it into something so it'll be a whole series that comes out of it.
Okay, yeah, that sounds great. I guess I didn't realize on Twitter that it was going to be a series, and then I saw that on your website last night. So that's pretty exciting. Do you have any ideas yet about how long you might want to let it go on, or is it too early to think about that kind of thing?
So I am thinking that Kotov Syndrome will be book one of six in this series.
Okay.
I say thinking not because I don't know how long I want it to go on, but my challenge is going to be really figuring out if it's going to be four books or six, because there are a pair of books in the middle that I am debating whether or not it's two books or four books just for length purposes.
Right.
And that's part of where I'm going with it. Like, right now I'm thinking it'll be six, because otherwise two of the books are just going to be obnoxiously long.
Right. Okay, cool. Yeah, I'm just always curious how a writer approaches this series idea, whether they conceive it as a series, whether they know in advance about approximately, I mean, of course they don't really know how long it's going to go on, but if they have some idea of how it might go on. I just find that really fascinating. How was the process of putting this book together different from putting together an epilogue to Innocence, like a short story collection, aside from the obvious fact that this is a novel and that was a story collection?
Right. And you know, there's just some natural differences in that it's totally different length of writing. But, you know, aside from that, I think there's been two key differences for me. The first of which is, even before I wanted this to become a series, like even before I had that kind of decided on, one of the things that was really different was the depth to which I got to build characters, and I really enjoyed that. You know, I've done longer writing pieces in the past, but in an epilogue to Innocence, like the longest story, that's 40, 50 pages, give or take, whereas, you know, this novel is in the 200s. There's copies of it above my head, and I don't want to knock myself off recording, figuring out exactly, but it's a much longer piece for obvious reasons, being a novel. You know, it's coming in at, you know, 80,000 words or so. And the amount of detail you get to put into characters, it's a lot more time consuming. And even, like, looking aside from a series for a moment, the challenge that you run into is building continuity within a story so that your characters are consistent throughout. One of the things I learned doing my Choose Your Own Adventure novel over Twitter was that there were some characters that, just because I wrote it over the course of 9 months writing bits and pieces every night, there were some characters, albeit minor characters, that were pretty inconsistent in their characterization throughout. And, you know, I would go back if I turned that into something and edit it. But building this at a novel length really allowed me to be able to do that. And the other thing that was different was, you know, I had a very different editing experience with this book than my first book. You know, my first book, with an epilogue to Innocence, I originally got the chance, I think I talked about this last time I was on, to get picked up by a publishing company only for them to go bankrupt, and I used one of their in-house editors. And, you know, it was a good experience and whatnot, but in going with this book, I actively, you know, I spent some time looking for an editor, and I kind of had a feeling I knew who I wanted to use as an editor from the get-go, but that didn't mean I didn't do my research and see, okay, you know, what do different people do? Right. And having an editor who was really willing to work with me, not just in the, like, does your grammar suck capacity, but in the, are you creating, you know, an immersive characterization with your characters, that was a huge impact. I think it made me care a lot about the story in ways I wouldn't have had I not had that.
Wow, that's really interesting. Yeah, that's great. I was actually going to ask you about Project Tasman, which is the Twitter-based Choose Your Own Adventure story. If you can describe the process of writing with other Twitter users, what that's like, what did you like most and least about it? Was there anything about that process that maybe you weren't expecting or that you found challenging? If you could talk a little more about that, I'm really interested in that too.
Yeah, so just for a little bit of context for those listening, you know, what I did was basically did a Choose Your Adventure where I wrote a story section each night, posted it, and gave, you know, 2 to 15 tweets of story section, and then at the end of there would be a poll where we could vote on what was coming next in the story. Because of Twitter's poll length, it's 24, 25 characters, couldn't really put a lot of description as to what's coming next.
Yeah.
So people just kind of had to pick. And the plus side to that is I think that it made me think on my feet a lot and, you know, really created an interesting story for that. The challenge there is just finding the time to write a new story section every day was at times challenging, because of the fact that, you know, there'd be some days where I could sit and dedicate, you know, half hour, hour to writing a section that was really well crafted, well thought out. And then there was other days it's like, oh, I've got 8 minutes before I need to post this. Let's go.
Wow. Did you like the, what the people on, I saw when you were doing that, I'm always nervous about like getting involved in something like that. I don't know why. Uh-huh. I guess I don't know. Maybe next time I see something like that, I will, but I guess maybe part of me thinks that I might not be able to keep up with it or something like that. I don't know. Like, did you find that the users really were receptive to that kind of thing on Twitter, or were you getting a lot of interest in the beginning?
It was more so than I expected, actually. I wrote, sorry, so we're recording this on December 11th,
right,
of 2020. I don't know when you're going to post it, but I get that context for sake of the fact that tomorrow, the 12th, would be the 1 year anniversary of the first poll, just out of how this happened to work out scheduling wise. And when I did the first poll, I had, I want to say, like 5 people vote on it. And that's about what I expected.
Yeah.
Throughout through the entire story. And I remember when we talked about this last time, I anticipated doing 4 weeks or so of story, give or take. And that's not what it became. I ended up finishing it around Labor Day. And then, you know, I've got alternate endings that, you know, because there's, just in the way that the story ends out, there's 7 different endings you can get, and I've written 2 of them out. I've still got 5 to write that I'll work through at some point here.
Wow.
That I've been posting on Wattpad, but, like, I didn't expect, those first 5 people who voted, I think I knew who all 5 were, and I was like, okay, well, that's pretty much the crowd I expect to be involved in this. And, you know, it blew up a little bit. Like, you know, I've never been one with a large Twitter following in the slightest. You know, I think when that started, I had about 150 followers,
right,
give or take. And, you know, when I finished, I was sitting just over 270. So, like, it almost doubled my Twitter following, having that,
wow,
story. It's along with a couple other things that happened in that time. But, like, I understand that that's small potatoes. You know, I know folks who have thousands upon thousands of followers. But, like, that was a huge thing. I did not expect it either to be as enjoyed as it was, nor for me to write it as long as I did.
Yeah, that's great. Would you do another one, you think?
Probably. I there's things I would do differently with it. I would have more of a plan going in that I had literally no plan going in when I did Project Testament. It's just like, hey, I'm going to do this. Let's go. And I kind of had to pretty quickly make one. I would have more of a plan going in this time. I've got a couple other projects going right now. You know, just with a book coming out in a little over a month, and NaNoWriMo having just ended, and you know, I have a Wattpad story I post on monthly that, like, I'm like, okay, let's at least wait until the other story gets done or until it's published, and then we'll figure it out, because I have a habit of jumping into too many projects at once. I probably shouldn't start another one yet, even if I want to.
Yeah. That's great. I would like to, I was reading a little bit more about Choose Your Own Adventure last night, and I'm like, you know, this does seem like, in the past, I've always been a little intimidated by it, but I'd like to participate in one at some point. So if you have another one, I might just do that. Now, as far as NaNoWriMo that you just participated in, what was that experience like for you? And I think you said you've done it before, so how did this experience compare with, like, the other time or times that you've done it?
So this is my 4th time doing NaNoWriMo. I did my first one in 2011. And that was when I did that with my one friend who I did the prompts with. So I've done it in 2011, 2012, 2015, and 2020 now. I also did a NaNoWriMo-like project in 2018, but it wasn't a true novel.
Yeah.
For that one, I don't count that, but I know some people do. This is my third time finishing. I finished in 2011, 2015, didn't get to finish in 2012. What was different about this time, in comparison to the other two, was that I both was more and less prepared than last two times. So in 2011, I went in, and I had, like, a pretty lengthy outline of what I wanted to do. I had just gotten laid off work, like, 5 days prior to NaNoWriMo. I had an outline of a story idea I had thought of. And I'm like, okay, while I'm busy applying for jobs all day, I'm going to do something to cure my downtime, and, you know, wrote that story. I actually finished 50,000 words in 17 days, I think.
Wow.
I had a lot of free time. I can't compare that one because, like, I had no job at that point because I was busy. It just hadn't been laid off trying to find a job that, like, I had so much free time that I could write a lot. In 2015, I literally went into the month with literally nothing, other than my two character names, that somebody suggested to me, and just built that on the fly. And then this year is kind of somewhere in the middle. I had notes for what I wanted to do, and basically I started what is either book two in the series that Kotov Syndrome is part of, or the first half of that second book, depending on how I break it out. And on the plus side to that, it allowed me, I think it let me get a little further. I got just over 60,000 words done in November. I didn't quite finish the book because I think first draft will probably be around 65 or so. It flowed easier because I had a lot of characters I was already familiar with and building off of that, even though it's a, you know, it's a totally different book in that it's a literally different book. So I came easier, but at the same point it was harder because, you know, I was doing a lot more of, well, how did I do this in Kotov Syndrome to make this make sense? Even though I know that's not the point of NaNoWriMo, but I found myself doing it a lot.
Yeah. NaNoWriMo, this was the first time I did it this year, and it was a little different than I expected. I did do a little over 50,000 words. I'm thinking now when I do the second draft, it's going to be radically different because I got a great idea for my novel like two nights ago. So, you know, we'll see how that goes because I didn't finish. I still had at least two chapters to do, so I'm probably going to take it in a slightly different direction. But what would you say to somebody, because last week's episode was my first episode of season two, and I kind of just devoted it, it was a short episode devoted to NaNoWriMo and some things that I learned, some things that I didn't expect. What would you say to somebody maybe who's thinking of doing NaNoWriMo, say, next year and has never done it before? What should they expect? What might they not have expected? Like, what kind of advice would you give them?
You will probably end up loving and hating your story several times throughout the month. I don't mean that as a good or bad thing. It's just a thing that is, like, going into this month knowing, like, you know, I kind of started to plan out an outline for the series as a whole, and I realized that I wanted to do this as part of NaNoWriMo just to get words on paper. It's like, I know I like the premise of this series. Like, I like it. I wouldn't be turning into a series if I didn't. Didn't mean I didn't hate what I was writing at various points. But at the same point in time, like, I think people, when you're writing it, you can really get into it and really care about characters, whether you have a pre-existing series you're writing off of or whether this is something you're writing from scratch. I think you can really get into it. So you're going to go through highs and lows in NaNoWriMo, and you know, you just do what you can to power through it. But at the same point in time, like, I look at it, and I know this is not the philosophy of NaNoWriMo, but, like, my 2012 novel, I got about 8,000 words done in the first 2 days, and then I had some stuff come up that just took me away from it, and I didn't end up getting writing again until right after Thanksgiving.
Oh, wow.
And so there was no way I was going to finish it. I think I only got, like, Yeah, 16,000-17,000 words done that month. I didn't end up finishing until the following March or April, give or take. But, like, I look at NaNoWriMo as more of a springboard. Like, yes, it's great if you get those 50,000 words. That's awesome. That's the goal of the entire premise of the month. But just because you get to 50,000 doesn't mean your story has to be done.
Yeah.
And I don't recommend publishing it the second you hit 50,000. You might want to, if nothing else, hit spell check, because I know I type a lot when I'm in NaNoWriMo mode.
Yeah. Yeah, I was surprised because I edit a lot as I write, and I was worried that that was going to hold me back. And it actually, I got used to not doing that. I'm dreading going back and editing what I have and probably rewriting a lot of it. But yeah, you get into the mindset and you just keep going, and it's easier than I expected. So that's good. But
right. Yeah. And this is my first NaNoWriMo since I started being an editor on my own, like, because I've done editing for other people's books. In 2015, I had never done that. And, like, coming out of it, I looked through my story, just skimmed through it earlier this week, and I'm like, my editor is going to kill me. Like, and I've never had that feeling before coming out of a NaNoWriMo until this year, having done editing myself. It's like, oh no, I need to edit this first.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's really interesting. Yeah, because I haven't really had a chance to speak that much to anybody. I had a few people that I was kind of keeping in touch with. You were one of them during NaNoWriMo, but I didn't really get to speak to you all as much as I would have liked to, because I, you know, usually had a little bit of time each day to write. So that's, yeah. But it's great to hear how other writers approach that, definitely. So you said a little while ago that you don't want to, you know, start too many projects, because you have a tendency to do that. I can relate to that because I do that myself. And I saw on your website that you offer a lot of services, such as copy editing, which you just mentioned you edit, resume writing, ebook formatting, you've done podcast editing. And how do you fit all that in and still focus on writing all you do, because you seem to write so much?
So the joke answer that I give to everyone, because this has come up before, is that I don't sleep. And that's only half true. I just sleep less than I should, which is a problem. I think part of it is I'm pretty selective about what I edit, really, with the exception, because I do some resume editing here and there, and I'm not picky about that. It's like, you know, if you have a resume, I will, like, that's pretty standard fare that, you know, they also don't take me the time to edit that a novel would, for example, that, right. You know, that I'm much less selective with than I am novels. I've been fairly picky about the novels and the authors I've chosen to work with. So I tend not to have too many projects going on at once intentionally.
Right.
And that's partly because, yeah, I work full time and I'm typically working, you know, 50 or so hours a week. I do that not to overload myself. But at the same point in time, like, with my editing, and even with my own writing and whatnot, I want to be able to put the effort into my editing as if it were my book, or my podcast, or, you know, whatever, that I don't feel right putting too much on my plate, that because the quality of my work would then go down.
Right.
So yeah, I think the selectivity is more of, like, it's not that I couldn't take on more projects, it's that I would feel bad about the quality I would give if I did too much.
Right. Do you feel like when you have a few projects going on at once, do you feel like, I guess that, is it a challenge, like, kind of doing one thing, doing another, like getting into, I guess, editing mode and then getting into, like, more writing mode? Do you find, like, switching back and forth between those challenging, or do you see them as kind of using the same skill set, I guess is what I'm trying to get at? Or a similar skill set, anyway.
I really, like, it's different skill sets to me. I mean, my day job is as a project manager, so, you know, shifting between things like that is just literally what I do on a day-to-day basis.
Right.
That, yeah, I, I can compartmentalize well, but I don't know that that's a function of my work background so much as it is a function of that's just, I've worked multiple jobs at a time for most of my life that, like, it's just a skill I've developed more than anything.
Right. Yeah, that's good. I think it's great that you do so many things, that you're able to do so many things. And you said you're not podcasting now, like, regularly, but you were. When you do your podcast, I noticed that you said on your Patreon page that it's kind of like writing with your mouth, which I like that. When you were doing your podcasts, were they, like, because mine, usually when I do them on my own, are scripted. But were you scripting a lot, or like, what was that preparation like? And was that similar to, like, your writing, or was that completely different?
It depends if I'm doing it by myself or not. If I do them by myself, I script 85 to 90% of what I'm going to talk about.
Right.
And in some cases, it's a little bit more. You know, I have my college background is in radio, and I spent 2.5 years hosting a radio show in college, where I had co-hosts, and we had an outline, and we had structured stuff that we did, and a lot of my podcasting, what I do now is based off that, where it's very much outline-driven, and I think that, you know, with the right hosts, co-hosts, whatever, that works well. And I think that's very much a chemistry thing that, you know, takes some time to develop in most cases. But, like, I think that what it's allowed me to do is to be able to, you know, when I've hosted podcasting stuff, I don't like being the person talking. Like, I know I'll typically give, like, an introduction and an outro, but, like, I don't want to be the person that's the focus of the podcast.
Right.
I have guests on, I have co-hosts, like, I'd rather them take the spotlight, and then I can kind of lead the discussion from there. And that's just kind of how I've always looked at it. I mean, that's very much because that's what the radio philosophy was when I was learning that, and it's kind of stuck with podcasting.
Yeah. Yeah, I can understand that. I'm the same way when I have guests on. I like to let them speak as much as possible, and I like to stay in the background as much as possible. One thing I wanted to talk to you about, because I noticed this on your website, that you said Kotov syndrome deals with a lot of mental health issues. And your other book, the Book of Stories, Epilogue to Innocence, also, I remember you went over that too. And you said you'll donate a portion of what you make from the book to the National Alliance on Mental Illness.
Mm-hmm.
How would you, because I kind of am exploring those issues in the project that I've been working on for NaNoWriMo, and how would you suggest that a writer looking to write about mental health issues approach them? Like, what are some good ways, like how would you suggest that they go about it?
Sure. So how I originally got into it wouldn't necessarily be the way I would recommend folks get into it, but, you know, I had a friend of mine who was very willing and open to talk with me about the mental health struggles that they were having. And, you know, I talked to them and I'm like, hey, you know, I'd love to be able to write a story focusing around mental health, and, like, I want to spend some time interviewing you and getting better understanding of what you live through, what you go through. And I understood at that point it was just that person's experience, but, you know, it was a starting point. You know, I spent, you know, the better part of 2 evenings just talking with them over Google Hangouts and GChat, basically probing any possible question I could think of for that. And, you know, as I've gone and I've learn more about how to talk about how to be a good reader of mental health topics, you know, I think that one of the things I've done is to educate myself through, you know, work done, and when I say work, I mean, like, written work in this case, of groups like the National Alliance for Mental Illness, the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. You know, they do good work. They give information that is, you know, not only medically valid, but, you know, is very sensitive to those suffering with mental illness and things along those lines. And I think having that that context certainly is helpful. You know, other things I think have helped me is, you know, just reading books that that focus around mental illness, but aren't necessarily like fiction. One of the books that really drove things home to me the most with how to deal with mental illness with Kotov syndrome and, you know, other books I've been working on. There's a book by, I have to double check to make sure I'm getting the title right here. There is a book, and the book is by AJ Mendez, and it's called Crazy is My Superpower. Now, AJ Mendez, for those not familiar, was a professional wrestler who wrestled under the name AJ Lee. And she has since retired and has become you know, a celebrity advocate for National Alliance for Mental Illness and a couple other mental health charities. And her book really focuses around her struggles with mental illness and how it affected her, but also how it affected those in her family with it. And really prior to reading that book, like there were really two ways I kind of looked at how mental illness could be handled in literature. One is the very clinical, like medical textbook type of way, which I think everyone kind of understands what that is. And the other way is a more fantastical way. And I think there can be a happy medium where you can address mental health concerns in a frank, in a direct manner, without sugarcoating them and without glorifying them. And I've tried to do that in my work. You know, I'm certainly not a perfect writer. I can see where I've grown from the work I did in Abhorred Innocence to now, and I'm sure that's going to continue as I work on future books. But, you know, I think that's one of the things that I spend the most time researching in my book, because I want to do it justice, and I think it deserves it.
And have there been any, because you mentioned the book you mentioned was nonfiction, have there been any good examples in fiction that you've seen, or on the other hand, are there any that you felt were, didn't get it right, like any novels or stories that, I mean, if you don't want to mention them, that's fine, but maybe were there any that you thought were exceptionally done well, or?
I don't know about the didn't get it right off the top of my head, because just because I don't know that there's any jumping out at me real quickly that did it exceptionally poorly. If you want to look at a book that I think did very well with this, and I know this is probably a cliche answer, but he really did do a good job, Turtles All the Way Down by John Green did a real good job of portraying mental illness. Particularly obsessive compulsive disorder. Certainly not the only book that has a focus on that, and it is just one perspective, but I think it was a book that did a very good job with it. Looking at some other books, I'm trying to think, there's another one that I read not terribly long ago, I'm just blanking on what the name of it was, but there are some other books that have done a good job with that. It's just the one that's jumping out to me at the moment.
Okay, that's a good suggestion. Do you feel, I'm sorry I'm asking you a lot about this, but I think with COVID that there's been a lot of, just in general, a lot of focus on mental health issues. And has your process approaching these issues changed at all since COVID happened? Or I know what I've been writing, COVID's going to play at least a little bit of a role in that, because it's pretty much been my life, everybody else's life too, the last 8 months.
So this book, Kotov Syndrome, I actually had out to beta readers when COVID started. So there really isn't that much about COVID in this book,
right?
Because the book was essentially done when everything really started kicking off. Had everything with COVID not happened, this book probably would have come out sometime in the early fall of 2019, just for various reasons. So that really won't have that much of an impact on this specific book. It is something that in the sequels is going to be something that's addressed. I have mixed feelings as to whether or not I wish I would have known about it prior, because on one hand, like, I don't Well, I understand books are escape, and that's not what people want to do, is to go read about COVID while COVID's going on. On the other hand, this book does take place in, you know, the future, that it probably would be nice to know about that. But, you know, I had this book essentially done before COVID started. That's like, oh, well, that was a missed opportunity, but there's no way I could have known about that. But at the same point in time, like, I think one thing that COVID has done, or this is what I would like to think COVID has done. I don't know if this is scientifically proven out yet. I would like to think that it has made society as a whole more accepting or more understanding of mental health issues, particularly those caused by self-isolation and, you know, people being far apart. My hope is that we become a more empathetic society as a result. Yeah. I don't know if that will happen. I would like to think that we do learn something from it.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that. I'm the same way. I'm hoping that a lot of things change. I'm not so sure sometimes, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you know what I'm talking about.
I'm there with you.
So another thing I want to ask you, you just mentioned beta readers. I really wasn't that familiar with the concept of beta readers before I got on Twitter, and if you could talk a little bit about what beta readers are for my listeners, and also what the process of working with them, contacting them, getting in touch with them, that kind of thing is like, that would be helpful, because I don't really know that much about it myself, so.
Sure. And I think that I have a better understanding of beta readers with this book than I did with my first go-round. So my first go-round, like, I knew that, and I don't even think I called them beta readers at that point in time. Like, I just knew that I wanted a handful of people, two or three or whatever, to look at my book and be like, hey, does this suck? Like, that was my entire premise behind it. I sent it off to, I think, three or four people, and not even necessarily looking for any direct feedback or anything, just what do you think of the book? And whereas with this time, you know, I tried to get a group of about 12 or so beta readers, and with some stuff with COVID, that group got funneled down a little bit. But ended up being 8 beta readers, and, you know, I had a specific subset of questions, like 4 or 5 questions that I asked to them, and I said, beyond these 4 or 5 questions that I'm looking for direct feedback on, what takeaways do you have, what things jump out at you, good or bad, whatever it may be. And I think that having more directed, like, of my 8 beta readers this time, 5 of them were folks that I handpicked, either because I know that they have written fiction themselves, they are published / self-published authors, or they are folks who I know are big into sci-fi, and this is, you know, a sci-fi book in its essence. And then I still took a couple of folks just randomly being like, hi, I'm looking for beta readers, anybody interested? Because I didn't want to have a fully siloed, like, people I know type experience, because I know that can turn out poorly. So I think part of the advantage to having that mix is allowed me to get a broader view. Weirdly enough, it allowed me to be more confident in my own writing. Like, my editor was telling me, you know, this, it's a good story, you've told it well and whatnot, and I believed that the premise of the story was good, and I told her that, but I don't know that I had the confidence in the book itself until it went through the beta reading process, and, you know, I got very positive feedback that it's like, okay, this, you know, this might be better than I thought it was. But, you know, I think the big thing to take away from beta readers is that having more directed feedback, like, there were certain things I was looking for with this go around, and having that, I think, made it a much more fruitful attempt than the first time, where it's just like, hey, give me general thoughts, okay, bye.
Okay, yeah, that sounds good. Thanks for talking about that. So how much sci-fi writing did you do before this? Is this still new to you, or have you done a lot of sci-fi writing in the past before this?
I've done a lot of dystopian writing in the past, which tends to overlap with sci-fi a good bit. I tend to lean more into the dystopian side than sci-fi, whereas this, there are some dystopian-like elements in the book, but it is leaned more towards sci-fi. I tried to go the other side of that spectrum because I've seen enough dystopia in the real world that I thought sci-fi would be the more interesting take. And I'm sure that a lot of that is, you know, a lot of the authors that I grew up loving to read, folks like George Orwell, M.T. Anderson, you know, they were very much sci-fi and dystopian writers. And, you know, one of the things I tried to do as I was going through and writing and outlining this book was get a better understanding of sci-fi writing. So I read stuff, just stuff I haven't read before by Philip K. Dick and by Alan Turing. And I know Turing isn't sci-fi, but he's very much a computer maven with when he was and what he did. And it's just getting a better understanding of how people view science and how people view technology, I think, really helped to drive that.
Yeah.
One of the comments that I got in my beta reading, interestingly enough, was somebody said, I don't remember the exact quote, but it was something to the effect of, this is a love story disguised as a sci-fi novel.
Oh, wow.
And that amused me to no end because, it's not the first time somebody said something like that about my writing. I tend to write very character heavy stories. And so like the world building and whatnot, you know, the sci-fi world building is definitely a thing in it. And there are some times in there where I do get a little heavier into that. But like, I look at this, it is a sci-fi novel to me, but yeah, I look at it and I want people to remember the characters just as much as they do the story.
That's cool. I like that. I like the way that sounds. Yeah, that's pretty much all I had as far as, like, questions and stuff. If there's anything else you'd like to talk about, I'd like to leave that open. I'll be putting links to all of the websites you gave me in the notes, but if there's anything else you'd like to discuss, we can do that.
I have nothing to discuss. Would you mind if I plug a couple things real quick?
Absolutely. Go right ahead. Whatever you have.
Well, so I will plug my book. As Marissa mentioned, it's Kotov Syndrome, which will be coming out January 23rd, 2021. You can pre-order it through Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, Half.com, a bunch of different places. It's out there. If they sell books, there is a good chance that they sell it. Really, the only places I've found that don't have it, but at least the ebook, are Target and Walmart, but I'm not that famous. So certainly not there. I also want to plug, there is another book that is coming out the same day as mine, and that is a book by another person you're going to be interviewing coming up here, and that is a book by Evie Jacob and her co-writer, P.T. Crawford. Their author duo is called Jacob Crawford, and it is called The Assassin, and it is book two in the Dark Sentinel series, and yeah. I am the editor on that book.
Nice.
And I am very excited for that book to come out, probably more than my own, which is going to undercut me selling my own book here, but it's a genuinely good book, and I'm very excited for that to come out, so I encourage people to purchase that book. And yeah, so that's all I've got to plug, I guess.
But it's great having you back on my show. I wish you a lot of luck with this new book. I didn't mean to get too far ahead with this series. I just noticed that on the website last night, and I'm like, oh, that's really cool. And a lot of stuff. And yeah, I learned a lot speaking to you, and it's great. So thanks again for coming on my show, and yeah,
good
luck.
Of course, it's a pleasure to come on.
And I would like to thank Tim Boffman Jr. for coming on my show once again and really just talking about a lot of interesting stuff. You can pre-order Tim's new book, Kotov Syndrome. That is going to be released on January 23rd of next year. But yeah, if you want to go in and pre-order it, that's always a good idea. I'm going to put links to all of Tim's sites in the show notes. And I would love it if you would send me an email and let me know what you think. You can reach me at marissadelifarfalle@gmail.com. You can also now become my patron on Patreon. For $1 a month, I will mention your name in an upcoming show. And for $3 a month, you will have access to 2 patron-only podcast episodes on the Patreon site. My Patreon page is at www.patreon.com/marissadf. If you don't follow me on Twitter yet, you can follow me on Twitter at @marissad13 or on Instagram at www.instagram.com/marissadf13. And I'd also really appreciate it if you could take a moment to rate and review this podcast on Apple Podcasts, as it'll help a lot more people find out about the show. So until next time, thanks so much for listening and for all of your support. I really appreciate everything that all of you do as far as getting the word out about this podcast and just listening and giving me your feedback. Please keep it coming. I'm looking to make this show even better in season 2 going forward. So, yeah, I will talk to you again soon, and peace out.
This podcast has been brought to you by Anchor, which is the easiest way to make a podcast. Go to anchor.fm for more info.